Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. I want to welcome everyone here, everyone from all of our campuses. As we get started with our series, this is part two of a series called Mad World. I have a little bit of housekeeping that I need to do before I jump in. So if you'll indulge me for a few moments, and I hope you don't leave after this, I want to talk about real quick the 2018 budget, and I want to tell you why. You'll understand hopefully why I'm doing it now in just a few moments. Just some things you need to know. If you're like a first-time guest, you can just like tune me out for a little while. I'll tell you we need to rejoin in the next few minutes. But if you're a part of Port City, I want you to hear this because it's something important for you to understand. Our church operates off about a $8 million budget, which is it's a lot of money, right? We all know that. And the amazing thing about it is all that money comes from people who attend here. That's just how it works. Whatever money comes in through people's gifts and generosity is what we use to make our budget. And it's amazing because we use those resources to basically manage. We have four campuses across Eastern North Carolina, making a huge difference in each place that we're in. And we also have partnerships on three different continents all over the world making a difference. And these aren't just like places where we send money. These are where we have people who are part of Port City that are working and serving in some very dangerous parts of the world. And the amount of work that gets done, the amount of reach that we have is actually pretty staggering. And several years ago, we were trying to understand like the dynamics of our church. Like we know about how many people come here each Sunday, but we were trying to figure out how many people actually come here all the as kind of a collection. We think it's somewhere around 12,000 people that would call Port City their home. That's a lot of people. And so as we were trying to figure this out, years ago, really early on, probably 3 years in, we decided we really need to be a really well-led organization. And we have, in terms of our budget and operations, we have an extraordinary system to manage the resources and operations of this church. And I can say that with great authority because I have nothing to do with it. They kicked me out of that about 9 years ago. And our board of directors, our operations staff, our administrative staff do an incredible job managing the way we do our leverage our resources and steward the money we have. And so the reason this matters for us is, and there are those of you who are finance people, you're going to love this. And for the rest of us like me, I'm going to try to walk us through this. We'll all understand it together, okay? The way we do this is to figure out our budget. You have to take 2016, right? So this is like January to December. You see that? You follow me so far? 2017, January to December, okay? And then 2018, and you get the same thing, January to December. So what happens is in 2016, July 1st, to be precise, up until this point right here, which would be June 30th of 2017. That's coming up in just a little bit. What we do is everything financially, all the money that comes in from there to right here is the amount of money we leverage for 2018. Make sense? Everything that comes in from here to here gets used in 2018. This allows us to be very strategic in how we plan and prepare. It takes about 6 months because we want to be great stewards. We've got a lot of moving parts. We want to make sure we're great stewards. Anything that comes in above and beyond that, we use it to leverage towards initiatives that come up, whether it's multiple campuses or mission efforts, things like that, because we want to be financially positioned to respond. That's how we operate. And so as we did our calculations, we're looking, we're about right here, as you can tell. There's about 7.5 weeks from here to there. Now, according to our calculations, we are going to be about $250,000 short of what we will need in 2018. Now, that is a lot of money, right? Here's the thing. There's a simplicity to this, and there's a very sobering reality to this. The simple part is we have 7.5 weeks to make up the difference. If things go just like they are, if you give just like you're giving, we'll be about $250,000 short. If we do anything different, we'll make a difference in that. The reality is, the simple part is, there's a lot of people who come to our church. There are a lot of people who do a little bit can make a huge difference. So it's not that big of a deal. Here's the sobering part. as we kind of looked over, and I don't want any guilt or anything, but there are a lot of folks who give regularly and generously to our church, and I say thank you. A lot of folks give online. Some of you, the baskets get passed in the Sunday morning. You're like, where's all the money? Well, it comes in during the week because people give online. That's how I give, and you do it on the website or through your bank or whatever. We are very, very grateful that we have more people giving more consistently than probably ever before. That's a great sign for our church. So if that's you, thank you so much. It makes a huge difference. There are a lot of people in our church who've never given anything. And I don't say that, here comes the jolt of guilt. I don't care anything about making you feel guilty. What I think happens is when people get behind or they feel like they don't give or can't give, they go, well, my little bit won't make any difference. I'm not going to do anything. And then you just feel worse and feel worse and feel worse. And I don't want that to be the case. What I want to understand is this. If everybody in our church who doesn't give anything gave $100 over the next 7.5 weeks, it would more than make up for that gap. Just a little bit would make a giant difference. Would have a tangible way to impact 2018. So I tell you that, and this is the part that I hate, because I hate people going, oh man, here it is, they're all about the money. If you know me well, if you know that is not what I'm about, but I will tell you what I am about. I am about the mission and vision of Port City Community Church, and I believe that God has entrusted us and he has called us. I mean, this is your church, this is our church. We're the ones who get a say in what it is that God is, in what God has asked us to be a part of that. And so I'm asking you to do something. The other reality is if everybody simply took and tithed 10% of whatever you made next week, if you took 10% of that number and you tithed off of that, it would also make a difference in that number. Huge difference. So what I'm asking you to do is just to do something. If you're here and you're going, I don't want you to feel guilty. I just want you to consider doing something. We've got 7.5 weeks to make this up. I believe that God has great plans for our church. We have given us incredible opportunities to leverage the influence he's entrusted us with in some powerful ways. And I want to be a part of that. And I think you want to be a part of that. So I'm asking you to be a part of that. Is that fair enough? All right, perfect. Good. We're good. Perfect. It's a mad world, right? Let's pray. God, thank you. Thank you for the day. Thank you for the people that you gather. You do that with perfection. You bring the right people in the right place. You provide perfectly. We confess and believe all of that. Father, what I ask is that as we kind of move forward, that you would speak to us, help us to see something perhaps that we've not seen before. And in doing so, that maybe we might be changed in ways we had not yet considered. God, that's my prayer for our time. I ask you to speak to our hearts. And God, use me to that end. And I pray the name of your son, Jesus. Amen. All right, we're in a series called Mad World. And if you were not here last week, we're talking about this idea of learning how to navigate this crazy world that we live in. And I started us off by backing us up and not talking about all the political issues, which all divide us. In fact, we live in a world where you can't even acknowledge that you like somebody, or else someone's going to think something about you that you may never recover from. And so we have this crazy world going on. And then we were talking about this idea of what it means to be friends with the world. And we all of a sudden started thinking about issues and how the world could be different. And what most of us believe is that if everybody just thought like me and lived like me, the world would be a much different place. I mean, isn't that what we think? And this is why we spend so much time trying to argue our case and to get people who are on the other side of our case to come to our side of the case, to our side of the argument, because we believe that if we could just agree on the issues, the world would work. And I don't think that's God's intent. That may be our intent, but I don't think that's God's intent. God intends to do something massively different. Because somehow it's not about, we think that if we could just get everybody to conform to the same way of living, the same way of thinking, the same way of being, the same way of doing, the world would be better. And God has this larger plan from which every tribe and tongue in all the world was going to gather and represent him perfectly. And we start thinking, how does that happen? How does that happen? Last week, we talked about this idea of sufficiency. This is where do you draw what you need, sufficiency. It always looks wrong when you write it. There are words that are like that, aren't they? It just always looks wrong. Sufficiency, where do you derive what you need for life? And what we said last week is that wherever you find your sufficiency, if you follow the source of your sufficiency, you're gonna find the center of who you are. You're going to find the thing that has your heart. And this place in the center acts like sort of a gravitational force. It pulls everything into it. And what we said last week is that most of us have learned the idea of self-sufficiency is a good thing. That's what we want. We want to make sure that we can take care of ourselves, we can control our own destinies, that we are in charge of our lives. And we realize that this is sort of the hallmark of everything that is good about our culture, to be self-sufficient, not realizing that when we become self-sufficient, what actually happens is we become self-centered. Self-centered is not some greedy kind of person you can't stand around. Self-centered is like me and probably like you. It's something that comes in and we don't even realize it. But what happens with self-centered, the problem with self-centered and how it contributes to the culture that we live in is that what a self-centered person does, it has a gravitational pull. It demands that you orbit around me. If you're self-centered, it demands that I orbit around you, and I'm not going to orbit around you, and you're not going to orbit around me. So it's going to create this reality that it makes it impossible for us to connect or to be together because we are in two different poles. This is what I think contributes to all the chaos that we have in our world. When you follow your self-sufficiency, you'll find your center. And the problem is that if we rely on ourselves or depend on ourselves, we're going to become self-centered. That's what we talked about last week. Now, what I believe, and as I've kind of mined this out, I believe that the result of the madness in our world, or the cause of the madness in our world, is distrust. That we really have no place that can bear the weight of our trust in this world, and so we just end up trusting ourselves. That's all you got. There's not a lot else that's available to us in this, and that's what happens to us. And so I've been mining or thinking about this. If self-centeredness is what keeps us apart, what is it that's going to bring us together? If self-centeredness keeps us apart, what is going to bring us together? Now, see, I watch some news shows from time to time, and I read a lot, but I've almost stopped watching the news because it just drives me nuts. And over the years, I've watched and tried to do some research just to kind of see what's going on. And I was kind of casually trying to just keep a record in my mind. I'd watch Fox News, I'd watch CNN, I'd watch MSNBC, watch all these different ones. I began to just watch some different hosts on some of these different shows. Saw interviews with politicians, and I just sort of made some notes in a notebook and just tried to think about this. And I began to wonder, and I'm just going to pick someone. I'm not making any positive comments or negative comments about them. I'm just going to use these are the facts and just ask you a question. Someone like, say, Sean Hannity, who's a host on Fox News. I don't want any jeers or ye or cheers or anything else. But Sean Hannity, like, does anybody really believe that he would ever say anything nice about Barack Obama? Don't answer. I mean, I'll give you the answer. The answer is probably no. He's not. It doesn't matter what Barack Obama does or did. He's never going to say anything good or nice about him. Or Chuck Schumer, right, the senator from New York. Do you think that he's kind of notorious? He's been after Trump for some time. No matter what Trump does, if Donald Trump did something really, really good that we all acknowledged was good, do you think that Chuck Schumer would acknowledge he did something good? The answer is probably no. The reason is because we build these positions based on opposition. It's not about the truth at all. It doesn't matter what's true. It's what we've built sort of our lives on, this idea of opposition. I want you to read this in context. James chapter 4. We looked at this last week, and I'm going to add verse 7 to it and see how this connects. Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God, which is, it's just this idea that whoever makes himself a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. There's just these two poles. And I always wonder this. I said, because what used to happen to me is every time I thought, man, I can't enjoy anything in this world or else I set myself in opposition to God. It always bothered me because I enjoy a lot of things. And I began to think about this. What if we wrote it backwards? If it says that if you love the world, then the love of the Father is not in you. But what if you turned around and said, if you love the Father, the love of the world is not in you? All of a sudden, it sounds less condemning. What if you loved God? What if there was something in you that allowed you to have this relationship with the world, wasn't consuming or wasn't source? There was something else that we could do here. Because see, I believe that God has called us to steward the world. He has called us to exercise dominion, to cultivate, to create, to contribute to civilization, to contribute to culture. He's gifted us to do that. What he is saying is he has given us a certain amount of authority over the world in which we live. And when we take and we exchange that authority, instead of make it our lives, instead of being an expression of life, it actually becomes a source of our lives. We've made friends with something that we're not designed to be friends with. And it shuts out the love of God. That's the picture here. And you see this in this next verse because it all reads in one paragraph. Don't you know that friends with the world is enemies with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy with God. Or do you suppose that the scripture, it is to no purpose that the scripture says he yearns jealously over the spirit that he made to dwell in us? And what he is saying there is, don't you know that God has created you with a purpose and he guards that purpose jealously? He's not going to give that to someone else. He has made you for himself, to glorify himself, and to have your life in him. And he's not going to allow your life to be found somewhere else. That's why they sit in opposition to each other. And then he says this, the answer isn't get it right. The answer is, oh, he gives more grace. He gives more grace. Therefore, it says God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. He opposes the proud, he gives grace to the humble. Verse 7, we add, submit yourselves, therefore, to God. So, see, what we do is we read this and we underline, ooh, he gives grace to the humble. Ooh, I like that. He opposes the proud. Ooh, my husband's proud. I like that. And we underline them and we don't stop and think, what does this mean? This is all together. He has a purpose. And he guards that purpose with jealousy, and he gives grace. He opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit yourselves to God. Why won't Sean Hannity say something nice about Barack Obama? Because he has built his platform on opposition, not the truth. And it's pride that's going to keep him from doing it. Why will Chuck Schumer not say something nice about Donald Trump or acknowledge him about Donald Trump? Because he has built his platform on opposition. And it is pride. It's the same reason a three-year-old will never acknowledge to you that they need a nap. You ever thought about this? It's not truth, it's pride. I've staked my claim. I'm not taking a nap. I'm 3 years old. I can do this now, and I'm not budging. And you have to pick them up and put them in their bed, and they're asleep in like 2 seconds. So aren't you glad you had a nap? No. They're never going to admit it because it's pride. It's pride. Think about how many of our positions that we have grown up with or have adopted. They're not rooted in really necessarily the truth per se. They're rooted in the fact that we're opposed to something else. And it's opposition. God opposes the proud. Any position we hold that is rooted in pride or putting ourselves above someone else or is rooting in anything else other than him, God opposes, but he gives grace to the humble. So how does this mean? Submit therefore to God. What does this look like? That's what I want to talk about over the next few minutes that we have together. I find it very interesting that God uses, when he's recording this for us, he uses the idea of friendship and the idea of love. He says, don't love the world, don't be friends with the world, but love God, be friends with God. These are relational words. He's talking about our relationship to the world. And what relationships are built on, and what love is built on is trust. He's asking you, what do you trust? What do you trust? And so we think that, okay, well, let me sort of mind this out and think about it spiritually. I just want us to think about it like human beings for just a moment. The way we interact with the world around us very normally, very naturally, and then take that and see how that might change the way we interact with God. Do not love the world or anything of the world. If you do, you make yourself an enemy with God. So I began to kind of wrestle this. And in this past week, I had a profound lesson in my life. On Thursday, I had the privilege to go to the Wells Fargo PGA Championship. I don't know if y'all knew this was in town or not. Did y'all know this? It's for all our other campuses. It's a big golf tournament here in Wilmington. A lot of you guys may have gone. I actually saw some Jacksonville folks there the other day. But on Thursday, I got to go to this. And now, this is especially amusing if you know my relationship with golf, right? I don't like golf at all. People, all you, oh, you're a pastor, you must play golf. Why don't you go play golf with me? I don't like golf. I don't want to learn how to play golf. I don't care. Until Thursday. I went and I watched the best players in the world play golf. Now, it's an interesting thing. I've never been to a golf tournament. Usually you pay money, you have to stand in the stands. In golf, you pay money and you get to like walk on the field. It's pretty awesome. We were like this far away from the golfers. I was like giving them advice. Hey, man, I use the 9-iron from there. I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? And what's interesting, there's a lot of rules in golf. While they're out there getting ready to hit, they will shush you. They will shush you. I got shushed. Shh. And what happens is whenever they shush somebody, they stare at you, and then everybody in the gallery stares at you at the same time. I was like, okay, I'm being quiet. In fact, I was on one hole, and my shadow was in the way of the guy driving. And they're looking at me like, I'm thinking like, what am I doing? I'm like, just standing more still. They're like, your shadow. I'm like, dude, your shadow, if you're any good, that wouldn't bother you. I'm like, people shoot free throws of people like waving noodles behind them. I'm like, my shadow? So this is happening. So I moved, I got my shadow out of the way, he hits the ball. And by the end of this thing, I begin to think, man, I love, I mean, just shot after shot. And you're like, this is unbelievable. I mean, and all of a sudden by the end, you love, I love golf. Like, I'm not kidding you. I was like, I love golf. And so I'm standing there watching this, you know, shot after, I've got the shush thing down. I got the shadow thing down. I'm now appreciating the game. I understand, like, there were times this guy's in a sand trap. I'm thinking, is he just going to, like, if it was me, I'm like going to just knock it up. 250 yards, he hits the ball out of the sand trap onto the green. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. And I watch this over and over and over and over and over and over and over. I thought, man, I love golf. I love this. And I began to think, why do I love this? Why am I coming to love this? Let me tell you what happened. As I watched, we walked probably 8 miles. We watched everybody. It was amazing because here's my observations. There were guys that played that looked like they could hit the ball a mile. Adam Scott, Australian, really good looking dude. He's like muscular as can be. He walks up and he's like flexing. And I'm like, dude, this guy's gonna hit the ball a mile. And he comes up there and he puts his arm and every muscle's flexing. He walks up. And then he addresses the ball. Like, that's what they mean by stepping up to the plate. They call it addressing the ball because golf is polite like that. And so he addresses the ball. And just every muscle is taut. He rears, wow! And you're like, holy cow. And then there's another guy who comes up. I'm not going to tell you his name, but he comes up. And he's like 50 years old. He looks like he could be my dad's bowling partner. He like walks up there. He's not flexed at all. He just walks up. Swack, and he hits the same thing. And so I'm watching this over and over and over all day. And by the end of the day, there's like one pervading thought in my mind. You know what it was? With a little practice. A little practice. I think I could do this. So like literally by like the end of this day, I am seriously contemplating reading my resignation today and taking a year off and going to train for the PGA Tour. I'm thinking I could even probably get some sponsors. Imagine someone who sponsored me for a whole year. Pastor leaves church, joins the PGA Tour in 1 year. I mean, like, can you imagine the marketing that we could, I'm like, so this whole thing is playing out in my head. And I'm watching over, and the more I watched, the more convinced I was that this could happen. Now, that led to some troubling discoveries, as you might imagine. Because I was pretty excited by the time the day ended. And then something happens called reality, or the truth, perhaps, maybe a better description. So I want you to see this. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 and 16. Do not love the world or the things in the world. Sounds more like more of James. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. All that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the pride and of the eyes and the pride of life is not from the Father, but from the world. Don't love the world or anything in the world. Because what is in the world is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. These things are from the world. They are not from God. Then Jesus says something like this. Matthew chapter 7, look at this. Enter through the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. It's really interesting. And some of you have heard this before, right? You've heard about the narrow way. So what he says is basically this. He says, there is a wide gate. And it is easy. And many people will chase it. There's a wide gate, it's easy, and many people will chase it. But then Jesus goes on, he says this, "For the gate is narrow, and the way is hard that leads to life, and few are those who will find it." Now begin to think about this, right? Because he says over here, there's a narrow way, and this way is hard. But those who enter through that will find life. So here's how I'm trying to process it, because what I begin to ask myself is, why is the narrow way hard and why is the wide way easy? Because what most of us have grown up believing, if you grew up like this, you heard the narrow, you think of the narrow way as like a tightrope, don't you? Use it with your kids. You better walk the straight and narrow, meaning don't mess up or you're going to fall to your death. Don't blow it. And some of you, you've been on this religious tightrope for years just trying not to mess up. You don't want God to be mad at you, because if you move one way to the left or right, you're going to plummet to your death. It's interesting, it doesn't say walk the narrow way. It says enter through the narrow gate. This isn't something that you're supposed to do. It is a place in which you get to be. It's very different. So I begin to think, why is this hard and why is this easy? Like, how do you reconcile this in your mind? Narrow is the road and it's hard, but it leads to life. Wide is the road and it's easy, and it leads to destruction or death. So here's what I'm thinking. As I watch these guys play golf more and more and more and more and more, the more and more and more convinced I became that this was the way to life. I loved golf, past tense, because I see it as a way to life. When he says anyone who loves the world, what he's saying is anyone who sees this as their way to life. That's the wide road. And all of your political views, if you think if you could just get your, if your political views are in line and they're this and they're this, God opposes the proud and you walk the wide path. For some of you, you've rejected God because you don't really understand the truth. You don't really contemplate the truth. You don't believe in the truth. And you are walking the wide path. And what happens is when you walk the wide path and it winds up being hard because you thought it was gonna, do you know what's going to happen to me, right? If I really seriously took a year off, if I really seriously did that, I'm going to be playing for a little while and I might have a couple of good days. Because there's a sound. When you hear that ball go swack, it makes you want to quit your job and play golf. And when you hear that or when you feel that, you think there'll be a few of those moments where I think this is going to work. But at some point in time, the truth would come to bear, and I would realize that this is ridiculous. And I would realize that I'd given up all this stuff and kind of blown whatever. Here's what I mean. A lot of you, you've been walking this way for a long time, and you think that it's hard, but it's not hard because it's hard. It's hard because it's death. You've tried to find your life in other things that will never, ever do it. So we live our whole lives chasing this dream. And here's the thing. The more and more I watched these golfers, the more convinced I was that I could do it. Think about your own life. The more and more you watch what? The more and more you fix your eyes on money or relationship or this sort of perfection or that sort of, the more and more you do it, the more and more convinced you become that that actually is the way. And it happens to us just like that. I said, what is so hard about the narrow way? So I got home from the tournament, and I turned it on because they play the end of it on the golf channel, and they replay it later. So I was standing about this far from the TV. I said, okay, come here. I saw this. I saw that guy. Watch this shot. And I was the whole thing. And so I kept watching and watching and watching and watching and watching, and even into the night, I was still watching. And I was sitting there watching these guys make putt after putt and chip after chip and drive after drive, and the truth came to bear on my life. And I realized this is what is hard about the narrow way. What is hard about the narrow way is to remain true to what is actually true. What is true is no amount of practice. Listen, I was with a guy who's a really good golfer. And by the end of it, I wasn't even paying attention to him. I was like, okay, Dustin Johnson's who I got my eyes on. You're like nothing. I could practice for a year and I still won't beat him. I won't come close to him. And all of a sudden the truth came to bear and I realized what is hard about this narrow way is to hold true to that which is true. This is not going to be my way to life. And I sat there and watched my dream die at about midnight. There it goes. I guess I'm going to preach Sunday. And so, as I thought about this, here's what's hard. What's hard is that you have to give up the lure of the easy. The lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the boastful pride of life. Giving those things up, not getting sucked into those, that is what is hard. The reason this talks about a hard way is because it is hard for us to let go of those things and it's hard for us to submit our lives to the truth. It's hard for us to bring our lives into submission, right? God opposes the proud. He gives grace to the humble. Therefore what? Go play golf? No, submit your ways to the Lord. Submit therefore to God. He gives grace to those who submit to him. Interesting, I began to think about this because we think of this idea, this narrow road, as this tightrope we have to walk. But what it is it's really a gate. Enter through the narrow gate. Wide is the road. You can do anything you want over here, and it's easy, and it's free, and it's wide open. But if you're going to find life really, you're going to have to enter through this narrow gate, and something is going to have to happen. My self-centered self, your self-centered self, something's going to have to happen to us. So we're going to think about this, trying to understand, what does it mean to enter through the narrow gate? Now, I'm not a very good driver. I was driving in Chicago about 8 years ago. I was driving in the downtown Chicago on the big interstates. I'm not a very good driver in Wilmington. I was not a good driver in Chicago. Somehow, I wound up on the rental car contract, so you have to drive. To everybody else's unfortunate luck. So I'm driving. And what happens is they have these toll roads and they go from like 16 lanes of traffic into like one. And people in Chicago, if you're from Chicago, I don't mean any disrespect, but they are not nice when it comes to merging. They give you like a polite little wave with their finger and then cut in front of you. And that's their, I guess that's what they use for blinkers. And so we're all this way, and what happens is people are going like 70 and 80 and 90 miles an hour, and they're all going, and all of a sudden it merges, and one of them goes, everything begins to stop, and everybody's got to then move and merge and get into one way. I think this is exactly what it's like. In order for you, for us, to sort of get through this gate, it is hard. Why is it hard? Because you have to give up some of what you've been depending on for so long. Remember, we're looking for a place we can trust. Sometimes you have to give, not sometimes, you have to give that up. And it doesn't happen easily. It doesn't happen quickly. And what happens is whenever you're moving at a pace and you've all of a sudden got to get through one gate, the first thing you have to do is to slow down. When's the last time you've recalibrated what you believe? I don't mean second guessed, it just recalibrated. God, I've grown up like this. I've always been this. I've always thought that. Have you ever like really said, God, I'm gonna just slow down? You're never gonna find, you're going too fast, you're never gonna make the gate, you're gonna smash into the wall. And that's the case for some of you. You're going so fast. He's going to get through the narrow gate, you have got to slow down. And the second thing is you've got to merge, and I'm gonna use the word submit. There's only one way you're getting through. I can argue all I want. I want to be in this left lane. I want to be in the right-hand lane. I had to get through the gate. And to get through the gate means I had to change lanes and get to the middle lane and go through the only place I could pass through. And I think that's exactly what he's saying. When Jesus talks about the narrow way, he's not talking about some tightrope we have to walk of moral perfection. He's talking about a relationship with Jesus Christ. Are you willing to submit? And maybe if I want to use this as a better word, I would say this. Surrender. Some of you, that's your one word for the year. Like, oh, that's my one word. God's speaking to me. Yes, he is speaking to you, right? In order to understand this, I've got to be willing to submit all of my ways to him. My money, my marriage, my kids, my vocation, my leisure, all of these things. God, I'm going to bring all of them underneath. God opposes the proud. He gives grace to the humble. Submit therefore to God. I want his grace. I want his grace. This world will never, ever come together as one. It is never going to happen. As long as we're trying to get everybody else to get in our orbits, we'll never, ever come together. If it's not a political issue, it'll be something else. You know what happens when you move through the gate? Your center changes. And he becomes your center. What would it look like? What would it look like if 8,000 or 10,000 people in southeastern North Carolina decided that he was going to be the center? We're never going to lord authority. We're never going to use leadership as an opportunity to exalt ourselves. We're always going to be. Whereas self-centeredness polarizes, there's something else that draws people together. I'm going to tell you that next week. But here's what I want you to do today. I want you to think about the gate. Some of you have been stuck on this tightrope idea for too long. Give up the tightrope. Give it. That is not what it means. That it's hard. You're like Nick Willenda. They're going, oh my gosh, little gust. And your life is so pressure-packed, and you're so worried about making God mad, and you're so... He gives grace to the humble, those who are saying, here I am. Not who can walk the tightrope better. He says, I want you to come and enter through the narrow gate, and here's what it means to you. What is it that you need to surrender? And maybe a better way to ask this question is, what is it that you aren't willing to surrender? Because some of you are, I'm staunch. This is my position. I'm not willing to come off of it. Because that's the thing that Jesus is going to go to work on. And I think if we're honest, all of us have that. But I think if we really want to learn how to navigate this crazy world, you got to let go of the dream that you're going to be a pro golfer. And you got to instead embrace the life that he has come to give and enter through the narrow gate. It's hard to let go of all the lures that pull us in. It's hard to submit ourselves to what is actually true. But it is the only way to find life. Imagine for a moment if you were free from trying to get a life and actually got to live the life you've been given. How much difference it would make in your world. Let's pray together. Father, I ask you would help us process this. For many of us, we have been stuck on this tightrope idea of moral perfection, and all of a sudden we realize that we're not supposed to walk this way, but rather we're supposed to enter through it. It's a place. A place where our self-centeredness dies and your life takes resurrection. God, I ask that you would teach us, show us, remind us, Help us do the gut checks on the things that we are unwilling to let go of. And Jesus, we invite you to go to work there. I ask that you would walk with us and speak to us and be gentle with us and help us to enter through the narrow way that we might find the life that you have for each of us. Your Father is jealous for those purposes. God, we need you to do this work in us for the sake of what you want to do in our lives and for the sake and what I believe you long to do through our lives in this crazy world in which we live. And we ask this according to the promises that you've given in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.